Welcome to the Faith Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're an entrepreneur driven by your faith or want to be driven by your faith, then you're in the right place. The best way to stay connected with us is to sign up for a monthly newsletter at faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. This podcast doesn't exist without you, our community, and we would love the opportunity to connect with you in person. One way to do that is to join us in Dallas this September 24th through the 25th at the National Faith Driven Entrepreneur Conference at Watermark Community Church in Dallas, Texas. We'll be recording live episodes and joined by friends like Andy Crouch, Phil Vischer, and the leaders of this movement. Go to our website to register. While you're there, please send us any thoughts you have about how this podcast might better serve you or any questions you might have about being a faith-driven entrepreneur.
But I just had a skewed view of what Jesus did and what he's calling us to do. So it took me really on into the major leagues to realize that it's not about what I can do. It's about recognizing what he's already done. And I use the saying once in a while that we don't need to continue to defeat sin. You know, Jesus has already defeated that. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't need to be our motive all day long, is to not screw up. It was more, and again, learning and still learning that today at 40 years old, but probably on into my 20s, to just get a better grasp on that. And I give a lot of credit to, one, my parents for leading us down this path as we grew up, of beginning to understand that, but also some chaplains and some players, some older guys that I played with along the way that were just awesome examples, and not just with what they said, but how they lived their life. And you could see it. I mean, you could see that light in them.
When Adam LaRoche, Golden Glove winner and standout for the Chicago White Sox, decided to retire from professional baseball, his decision seemed like one of the most unexpected moves in sports. But for those who know him, this move aligned perfectly with the integrity of his character. In today's episode, you're going to get a peek behind the curtain of the life of Adam LaRoche, his MLB career, the factors surrounding his decision to retire, and his journey to become a faith-driven entrepreneur, taking him into the next chapter of making an impact and new ventures with Willie Robertson, Jason Aldean, Luke Bryan, and many other friends. We love talking to faith-driven athletes and faith-driven entrepreneurs, and Adam gave us a little bit of both. Let's join Henry, Justin, and myself on a special episode of this new podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. This is a special edition. We're co-releasing this with a faith-driven athlete, a new podcast from the folks at Faith-Driven Media. Yours truly and present company included. We've got Rusty Roof, who many of you know is our co-host on Faith-Driven Entrepreneur and on occasion on Faith-Driven Investor as well. Justin is our executive producer, and today we've got a really special guest for this crossover edition between FDE and FDA. It's Adam LaRoche. Many of you will recall this great story of a guy super serious about loving on his family, having his kids as they were growing up, being a part of his larger professional sports experience, and then he decided to walk away from Major League Baseball and a big check to come on board and be focused on some other entrepreneurial endeavors that he had. And so we're going to learn about those today. But Adam, first, let me just tell you, I'm just really pleased and grateful that you join us on the program.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate being invited and looking forward to it.
Excellent. So we love starting every episode by hearing the story, of course, of the guests that we've got on, and hoping that you can tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up and then the path that your career has followed.
Yeah, I'll start with the baseball side just because I think that may kind of give a base for moving on into where I'm at now. But we grew up and baseball was all we knew. I mean, that was our life. My dad played for 13 years in the major leagues. Both of my brothers played. And just growing up, that was totally normal to us to travel all over the country in different towns. And I don't know how many different houses we lived in and schools. And, you know, Fort Scott, we would always call Fort Scott, Kansas, where I'm at now, where our ranch is and where we live today. But we'd always call that home. And that would be, you know, as soon as the season was over, we would come back to that. And really growing up, I think just out of being young and not knowing any better, I just knew that baseball was what I was going to do. And I think just because that's what my dad did. And I joke saying my two brothers and I, you know, none of us were smart enough to do anything else, but really, that was just kind of our life. And I would say we didn't have any backup plan for what if baseball doesn't work, because I don't think it was cocky or arrogant. I think it was just not knowing any different and saying, this is what we're going to do. But I also attribute a lot of that to the reason that we did make it and we're able to play. Both my brothers again played some pro ball. I actually got to play with my younger brother, Andy, in the major leagues in Pittsburgh. He was playing third. I was playing first. One of the best years of my career, you know, getting to play with him. And gosh, that was just our life. So then going into, then I got married really young. We've got two kids now, and one of them's a senior and junior in high school, boy and a girl. And so we had those really young in my career. And, you know, they kind of took the exact same path that we did growing up. It was just grab your schoolwork, run to the next town, especially when I was in the minor leagues. And, you know, you never know where you're going to be the next year. I mean, the next week, really. You guys know how sports is. You can kind of bounce all over the place. So they grew up doing that. And I was just coming back to Fort Scott in the off season and reconnecting with their friends for a few months. And then, you know, right back out the door for spring training. So I loved it. I know that's really hard for probably moms, especially, to understand that haven't. I think military families are the only others that could maybe relate and understand with just never knowing kind of what post you're going to be at or what team you're going to be at. But growing up, it was so cool, especially now as we got older, to really have friends kind of scattered out all over the place and, you know, going on all different types of businesses and families and things they're involved with. So it's pretty easy for us now to travel and know somebody everywhere. And my kids kind of grew up the same way.
So bring us through now. So you're a couple of years into the Major League Baseball career that you have, and you have this faith that's a big part of who you are. But it sounds like you kind of grew into your faith and maybe even grew into your faith along with your career. I'd love to hear about that and bring that into this story about how you ended up doing National Faith Day in baseball.
Well, I did not, just to correct, and I don't know what you guys had heard or thought, I didn't start that. I helped start that in D.C. So fortunately, there was a lot of teams doing that. And I don't know if that was back in my dad's era or when that started, but it was kind of select teams. And I think it depended on where you were at in the country and kind of the politics of that team and where it was located. But to back up a little bit, and growing up, we grew up in, man, my parents are just awesome. I would not have said that back then. And they probably would not have said that we were great kids back then, because we were terrible. And I still try to repay my parents every day for the hell we put them through growing up, because my mom's got some good stories on that. But looking back, and their priority for our life was never career. It wasn't school and grades and college and, you know, what are you going to do to set yourself up financially and to get through this world. It was more of the reminder that we're not of this world, and this is what our mission needs to be. It needs to be to love God and love others. And back then, I think it was a lot different in the way parents raised their kids up in the church. And it was, every Sunday was mandatory. The Wednesday night Bible studies, a lot of times we would host at the house, you know, Sunday school after church on Sunday, whatever church events were going on, you know, we were involved with those.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't trade that for anything. One of the problems was, is I grew up with a view that I need to do whatever I can do to not go to hell, which, looking back, is just a really selfish way to look at what God's really calling us to do. That when he's saying it's not about us, but then we make it all about us by saying, how do I get over that cut line? So I kind of grew up with this, a little bit of a fear of sin, fear of hell, and wanting to get into heaven. And then if I could along the way, I want to make disciples and share my testimony and, you know, bring people to Christ. But I just had a skewed view of what Jesus did and what he's calling us to do. So it took me really on into the major leagues to realize that it's not about what I can do. It's about recognizing what he's already done. And I use the saying once in a while that we don't need to continue to defeat sin. You know, Jesus has already defeated that. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't need to be our motive all day long, is to not screw up. It was more, and again, learning and still learning that today at 40 years old, but probably on into my 20s, to just get a better grasp on that. And I give a lot of credit to, one, my parents for leading us down this path as we grew up, of beginning to understand that, but also some chaplains and some players, some older guys that I played with along the way that were just awesome examples, and not just with what they said, but how they lived their life. And you could see it. I mean, you could see that light in them. So I don't have a crazy kind of come to Jesus moment. It was just kind of gradual over time of, I guess, getting to know him a little more and kind of getting to know his life and what he actually did and what that meant. And that I kind of started to realize it was almost a slap in his face to think that there's something I could do about this, like that there's more that I could do here to guarantee me getting into heaven or my family getting into heaven. And so just kind of starting to understand that it's not just about walking into that church building every Sunday morning and checking that off your box and hosting a Bible study at your house where your friends come over or whatever, that absolutely that is an awesome part of it that we're allowed to do. But I've started really recently, and I'm jumping around here, but I've started recently to realize that church is more like, it's almost like a mission brief with our military guys when they go in to get their op order of what they're going to do. And then it would be like them breaking out of that and just going back to the barracks and doing absolutely nothing about it. So I say that church for me is almost a, I'm going there to get some little nuggets or to get some knowledge or to get something that I can use throughout that week in my mission. And I never viewed that growing up. And again, this is, it's nothing against my parents at all. I know what they were trying to do. We just, I think sometimes it takes a while for that to register. Yeah. So just kind of understanding that. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, as you talk about your faith, I've heard you in the past talk about your faith in light of what you want to see on your tombstone. And you've got a great illustration around that I think is particularly helpful for business owners and entrepreneurs that are listening to this in addition to the larger faith-driven athlete audience. Tell us a little bit about how you processed what was important to you, what you'd like to see on your tombstone in terms of your identity, and then how that led you to think about that big decision you made, you know, 6-7 years ago.
Well, you know, that came from a chaplain, Tim Pearson, who's one of my really good friends. He was our chaplain in D.C., and he's actually the one that helped me kind of get the Faith Night started there through the Lerner family and the ownership in Washington, who were awesome. But I remember him asking one day, like, what's important in your life? And he was asking, I don't know, probably 8 or 10 of us there in chapel one morning before a game. And so let's write it down. So everybody kind of write down like what's important. And of course you're in chapel. So you naturally, the first thing you're going to put down is God and faith and my family. And okay, perfect. So everybody, I think some guys got up and read them or whatever. And he said, okay, so you die right now at your funeral tomorrow. What is read for your eulogy? What is written on your tomb? Like, what are other people going to say was important to you? And so it was almost this, let's look in the mirror for a minute and what we want it to be versus what it actually is. And I just thought it was an awesome illustration of, I think all of us on our tombstone would write, or our eulogy or whatever at our funeral would want said about us, that he was an awesome follower of Jesus. He was a loyal friend and devout husband and father, and these kind of ethical, moral things that define who we are. I don't think any of us would want our career batting average or all the accolades we got or our bank account and, you know, retirement funds and everything we got stashed away in the bank. And so his point was, if that's going to be the most important thing to you at the end of your life, shouldn't we be living that now? Shouldn't we be showing, again, not through our words, shouldn't we be showing people through our actions that these are the most important things in my life? And for whatever reason, that just really stuck. And I think that's when I started to kind of prioritize some of that. And not long after that, I end up in Chicago and played there for a year. And one thing that I think a lot of people don't know is that off season, I got introduced to the counter sex trafficking world. So I took a trip over to Thailand. Really long story short, one piece of that I do want to talk about is going over there. I knew that we were going to be going into brothels every night, basically into strip clubs every night in Thailand, and trying to find these underage girls that were there against their will. And my fear, being a man, my fear was I'm going to go over there and I'm going to go off mission and be checking these girls out. I mean, there's a chance there's going to be naked girls over there. Like, I didn't know for sure what we were getting into other than we were going into kind of these dance / strip clubs where men can come in and purchase women. And so I know in my heart where my mind can go if I let it take me there. So I prayed for a couple months before I went over there, just the simple prayer of give me the eyes of Jesus. That's all I wanted going into that trip to Thailand. And it was the coolest thing because when we would leave and we'd leave at 2 a.m. or whatever and go into, I don't know how many different brothels every night and get back to our hotel room and kind of meet up and debrief. And I could not tell you what I saw kind of from the neck down. I mean, it was obviously an answer to prayer, but it was also confirmation that this is a fight that God wanted me in.
Yeah.
And we did some great work over there and we were able to work with their law enforcement and got some of those girls out and got some of the traffickers arrested. It was awesome. But I got back from that. And my partner in this, Blaine Boyer, who recently retired, he was a pitcher with the Royals. We just kind of traveled around and met with as many people that would meet with us on the subject of counter trafficking. So to jump back into in Chicago, coming into that spring, I'd just come off of that trip where I was really torn, thinking, man, am I really going to go out and play a game right now with all this going on? And when we got back to the States after that trip, we started to realize how big the issue was in our country also. We originally thought trafficking was a third world issue and then started to understand that it's in every county in the United States, which that was years ago. So I've since learned a lot more on that. But at the time going into spring training, I was a little confused on and almost felt selfish that I was going to do this when I just got confirmation a month before that God also wants me in this. So it was a confusing time. And then the thing with Drake with my son, where they had changed policy there and decided that kids were no longer allowed to do some of the things they were before, which, by the way, I get it. That is totally unrealistic for kids to go to work with you. So that's why afterwards, it obviously it made it a really hard thing to defend because it's not realistic. Like nobody understands that. Nobody gets to take their kids to work every day. I was just fortunate enough to play in a profession where I could do that over the 2 or 3 years before that. He came, he was like another employee on the team. So they changed that rule. I just got back from the Thailand trip. And so kind of those things combined was, I think God telling me that this might be a good time to step away and focus on the bigger mission.
So that's fascinating. And just to bring our audience back in, you were able to bring your son into the clubhouse for several years. It got on the press. And as that was repealed, as you just said, you didn't fight it or anything like that. But, and that's not the bigger story. The bigger story is you're calling as a dad and wanting to be there for your family. And you're able to prioritize that over, what was it, $10, $13 million, something pretty serious. I mean, you're a big-time baseball player. You're a Golden Glove winner, the Silver Slugger Award, all these different types of things that allowed for you to be at the top of your game, and yet you walked away from it. Whether the policy was right or not, is you walked away from it, prioritizing your family and your mission calling, and that's a big deal. Tell me just a little bit more. You know, dad to dad, tell me a little bit more about what that time was like.
Well, on the financial side, and it's something that I chased even as a believer, as growing up as a believer. I mean, deep down, like that was a huge part of baseball and decisions, and the mission was, and I'll use the quick analogy of you're in high school and it's great, you can't wait to get to college. Then I got to college and that was awesome for a minute, but man, I just want to start pro ball and start my career. So I get into pro ball and finally, like, mission accomplished. Well, that wears off after about a year of pro ball, and then I want to get to the major leagues, and then you get to the major leagues and I want to make $1 million. Okay, you make that. I want to sign a long-term contract. I want to, you know, and it's more and more and more. And then one day you look up and you're like, man, I just want to make enough where I can retire and go golf or sit on the beach or whatever just the rest of my life. So I had played long enough where it hit me well before that, that the fact is it's never going to be enough. If I'm putting all my hopes and dreams in this money or this bank account or this nest egg for my family, I will never be satisfied to it. So the timing was great because honestly, I don't know a few years before that if I make that same decision. But before the decision was even in front of me, I did recognize that if that's where my priority is, it will absolutely never satisfy me. So, you know, all that to say, I'm so thankful that I was able to recognize that beforehand And it really made that, that was one of the easiest decisions I've made, to be honest. I mean, I literally came home that night and I told Jen and Drake and my daughter, Montana, what had happened. I said, hey, I think this might be time to shut it down. And they were all thumbs up, whatever you want to do, we're with you. And, you know, slept great that night. And the next day went in and told them. So it was simple, but because I think of just the timing of it and the place I was and understanding that nothing on this earth is going to satisfy us. All these things we chase, whether it's alcohol, drugs, women, money, status, every one of them is a dead end. And it may bring that kind of instant satisfaction, but you're going to continue to need more. So made it simple, man. That was, I noticed my kids were getting older. They were both in high school. I started looking at the days I had left with them and, you know, that my window was closing to really impact their life before they go out on mission. Like, what do I want them to take from their days with us? Is it that it's money and it's high school and it's good grades and it's college and it's moving on up the worldly ladder? Or do I want them leaving with the single mission of love God, love others? So
that's powerful stuff, Adam. It's Justin jumping in here. Thank you for sharing that. You know, this is a unique episode for us, combining faith-driven entrepreneur and faith-driven athlete, bringing those two together. So I kind of want to pivot here and talk a little bit more about the entrepreneurial journey. Since that decision years ago, it's been fun to follow and hear a little bit about what's come about. So talk to us about the name of the company, E3. Where did that come from? And kind of what does that look like today?
Yeah, so I was playing in Pittsburgh with another first baseman, Doug Minkiewicz, and it was right around the time I was looking for a name for our ranch that we live on here in southeast Kansas. And Doug Minkiewicz, great dude and just hilarious. And I looked down one day and we're taking ground balls together, and on his first baseman's glove, he's got it embroidered E3, just E-3. And that is not what you want to see flash up on the scoreboard as a first baseman, by the way. When you see that, that means you just made an error. That's an error on the first baseman. And most people don't know this about the ranch or why it got its name, but I just thought it was hilarious that Doug had put that on his glove. So I kind of stole it from him, and we ended up putting an E3 brand on the front gate, and had no idea that this would ever leave kind of our town. There was no meat company. There was no E3 Foundation. There was no restaurants. There was nothing E3. And a friend of mine, Luke Bryan, who's now country music in Nashville, and he was still in Georgia at the time. He came out to the ranch years ago, and I had some E3 hats made, and he steals one of my hats from the ranch. And next thing I know, it's on like the CMAs or ACMs or something, one of these award shows, and he's wearing it. And then everybody wants the hat. Not long after that, we were raising beef for ourselves, just raising all natural Black Angus beef here. And we'd butcher a couple of steers a year. And I started having teammates asking more and more about the meat. So we'd start shipping out to teammates kind of coast to coast. And fast forward probably 3 or 4 years, and then we started the meat company, and then restaurants followed that and all kinds of E3 stuff. So yeah, it started as kind of a joke, and then Luke taking it out to the world by just wearing it everywhere.
Well, but now you've got three more people who want a hat too now. we've got to have our E3 hat, you know, for sure.
There you go.
Adam, man, you're sharing so much with our listeners, but if you could you summarize kind of all the pieces of E3 from us? You know, whether it started out with this plan in mind, it kind of sounds like you guys have built a whole farm to table process.
Yeah. And it's funny, they've all come together now, but started separately, ironically. And I talked a little bit about how we came up with the brand, the actual E3 brand, and how the ranch got named E3, and you know, a little bit on the meat company. But as that started to develop and we were shipping out beef, again, we decided, man, we were literally driving to Pittsburgh, Kansas, and go to Walmart, buy a Coleman cooler, and go get ice packs and throw a quarter or half of beef in there and ship it out. I think it had to be FedEx back then in order to get it, you know, in 2 or 3 days before everything thawed out. It was just totally inefficient. I think guys were paying as much on shipping back then as they were the actual beef that we were sending them. So eventually we developed the E3 Meat Company website and kind of pushed everything online just to make that process a lot easier. Got involved with UPS and got a relationship with them, and just everything started to become more efficient. Throughout that, we decided
to do a total utilization of our animals. So all of our steers will go up to Omaha to a friend of mine that has a processing plant up there, and they'll handle all the processing. But then there's all this leftover that traditionally would just kind of get discarded, whether it was the hide or the bones or lungs, trachea, like you name it, all these usable pieces on a steer. So a couple of years ago, we started the total utilization, and now we're able to take all those and put them into our pet treats kind of canine wing of E3. And then all those are smoked again, naturally up there in big smokers. And now we're able to sell a lot of that as pet treats. And then we're starting to implement and do some more things with the leather and the hide. So that's kind of the total utilization there on the meat company side. As far as the restaurants, it was funny. I was up in Steamboat quite a few years ago, and Willie Robertson, my partner in Buck Commander, and I were up there and asked my brother who lived there what the best steakhouse was in town. So he told us this place, and we ended up going to it, and it was just not very good. And I literally came back that night to Jeff and said, hey, we need to open up a steakhouse here in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. I'm going to supply the beef from the ranch, because we had already started to kind of launch the meat company and had access to that. So that launches. My other two partners, Luke Bryan, Jason Aldean, spent some time over the years up in Steamboat Springs and eat at that restaurant, and then decide they want to partner up and do another E3 Chop House in Nashville. So yeah, they all kind of came together through a lot of the same people. Just timing was different, and it all happened to flow into the E3 brand. And then if I go back before all that, our real mission out here at the ranch was just to serve guys. And that wasn't always the case. Like, there was quite a few years when I lived out here, and selfishly and not even thinking about it, I was just kind of using the ranch for me and my family and my friends. And we'd hunt and fish and raise cattle and do all the things you do on a ranch. And I think God just kind of hit me with it one day that he had blessed me with all this, and how was I using it for the kingdom? So I just remember going to my wife and saying, man, we've got to do more with this ranch and all this that we've been kind of gifted with to serve others. And playing in D.C. and get to spend time at Walter Reed Hospital over the years and just getting to know a lot of our military guys, we decided to be a perfect opportunity to just host those guys out to the ranch. And then came the E3 Foundation, and now we get to serve those guys. And then, like I said, the second kind of the other part of that is the counter sex trafficking work we get to do. So yeah, it's been fun to watch Luke Bryan first coming in 12, 13, I don't know how many years ago, when we had just gotten the brand and the hat and the E3 going to where it is now. I never would have guessed it.
Yeah. Fascinating story. You know, it's fun hearing again, wherever God has you, that he is giving you a vision for your vocation, your work, being an act of worship with us, an athlete, an entrepreneur here. Bridge those two together for us. When you think about kind of your athletic career, how did that prepare you? What are some of the things that you carried over from that into being a business owner?
Man, Justin, I think I'm going to say the fact that baseball was not everything to me. And I take a lot of pride. I actually took pride in saying that towards the end of my career, as odd as that sounds, that I do not want this to consume me and be my life. And I used to say, and I used to tell, younger teammates coming up to be careful that baseball is just what we do, not who we are. I've seen it really in all sports now, just having kind of friends throughout that community. I've seen how it can consume guys. And then unfortunately, when you get out and you become a retired player, if that was all you had, it just crushes guys, whether it's lack of mission and just kind of feeling worthless, not having that uniform on. As we all know in sports, the divorce rate is through the roof. Just a lot of side effects that come along with going through a game that really asks you, and almost it tries to force you to be consumed with it, because to play at the top level, you've obviously got to put a ton of time and heart and blood, sweat, and tears into that. So it's a challenge to make sure that that's not all you have. And I did. I took a lot of pride in that. Throughout my playing career, we had, again, the foundation and E3, and Buck Commander had been going on for years. So there was always other things that I was involved with that I really think helped prepare me for retirement from one, being baseball, to dive into some other missions.
So I've got to ask one more question here, Adam, before Rusty jumps in. But, as a dad, hearing you talk about that, just not being consumed by the things that you're in, seeing your work as worship, but not worshiping work. Talk to me about what that journey has been like as a dad. I mean, your son's had a front row seat to some huge life decisions, some things there. How has that affected him and your relationship?
Well, we've always, and I do not deserve the two kids I have. I promise you, I think I told you guys earlier that I was not the greatest kid growing up. I was constantly in trouble. And just, there's, again, my mom would have a thousand stories there of things that she wishes I would have done differently. So I've been incredibly blessed to have two kids. They're just really good kids. I think a lot of it comes from the parents that I had, the way I saw them raise us and kind of what was important to them. And then to be able to just kind of tweak that and pass that along. So I never want my kids to think that this game being baseball, the ranch, the meat company, you know, any of the stuff that we've gotten into is more important than opportunities to serve and just to be cautious, not to get consumed. And I tell them with schoolwork too, not to get consumed in the things of this world. And again, I wish my wife was on here because I owe a ton of the credit to her. She's been able to fill a ton of those gaps, you know, in baseball we're gone so much. And she spent a lot of the time doing it solo. And we just made a really good team and tried to remind ourselves and our kids that they really don't belong to us, that their true father is not me. That's our Heavenly Father. And that they've just been, we've kind of been assigned and given the responsibility to lead them through the first part of their life here. So it's been a blast. I hope they continue to grow in that. And one thing I will say is that I don't know that as awesome as my dad was, I don't remember a whole lot of anything he told me. Like anything he said, there's nothing that when I look back on the years with my dad that like crazy impacted me with his words. But I remember how he treated people. I remember how he made me feel, how he handled situations where it may have been really easy to tweak the truth a little bit, you know, just all those things that you, from the outside, you watch in people. And yeah, I just urge all, especially parents out there, that it's, we can say all we want. They're going to get way more out of our actions and how we're living and how we're backing up those words than anything we could ever say to them.
Yeah. You mentioned Luke and you got another thing that's going on, right? With Buck Commander. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we do. Oh, that's been going on for, I think we've been on the Outdoor Channel for, I think, 10 years now, our TV show, Buck Commander. And it's two other ball players, Tom Martin, who was a pitcher, and Ryan Langerhans, who I played with the Braves, Willie Robertson, who really kind of started all of it. It's a sister company to Duck Commander. And then Jason Aldean, Luke Bryan, and our latest partners, Tyler Farr, another country music guy out of Nashville. So we just, man, when hunting season hits, we try to get together as a group as much as we can. And I will say we don't hunt quite as much as we used to. The older we've gotten, I think there's probably more pranks and kind of screwing around type stuff going on. And it's just a blast. It's an awesome group. It's led to a really cool platform for us to share with that industry and show them just kind of a unique way of doing it. So yeah, we got a camera crew and production crew, and they make it really easy on all of us with all the other stuff we have going on that we kind of just can show up at different places and hunt.
That's really cool.
As a group for about a week at a time. So nice. Yeah, that's been a blast. But leading into, if you want, hear more on kind of the E3, kind of the business side, is that the direction we're going with it?
Well, actually, I wanted to pivot, and maybe there's a part of this in here, but I wanted to mark a time here because when we're recording this, we're in the middle of this COVID-19 pandemic. And I wanted to ask you, you know, what's God putting on your heart and how E3 might be responding, or even in your rest of your beef business? You know, is there something that's going on and stirred inside of you with COVID-19?
Well, yeah, I think it's changing the world daily. One, and totally outside of business, we had a Bible study yesterday and we were kind of talking about this fear versus faith. And that I think with the COVID-19, you've got one or the other. I think you're either just totally afraid and looking forward of what might happen, what could happen, how it's going to affect me, or having complete faith that God's got it under control and literally what's the worst that can happen.
Because as a believer, I mean, the reality is the worst that can happen is you kick the bucket and you're in paradise the rest of your life. Like, I don't see that as being the end of the world. And I mean that when I say it. So yeah. I don't know. I don't want to say that this was God's plan and he designed this, although he does some crazy things that we can never understand. So it wouldn't shock me at all. But I think it is really cool at the amount of people who are forced now to spend more time with their family. And I think it's one of those that so much of the world does not like the race that they're in. And they do not like that there's the volleyball and soccer tournaments every Sunday morning, or baseball tournaments that eat up every single weekend, or the school events and then work and then just this keeping up. And maybe this is kind of God's way of making the decision easy for all of us, of shutting that down for a little while and reconnecting. But I do think, and that was, again, another small reason why I left the game, was I just kind of saw how sports was consuming so much of parents and kids in their life, that there was just there was never any time for anything else with, you know, the things that pile up in life. And this has kind of put everything on shutdown. And I don't mean to say that this COVID-19 is going to be all positive, because obviously people are seriously affected and businesses are seriously affected. But maybe can we look at the positive and look at it as almost a reset for a lot of us on our priorities? So as far as the meat company, ironically, and it, one of the things that's been difficult is it's making our sales shoot up, right? We ship beef. We ship beef to people's doorstep. And so everybody now is kind of in a frenzy to stock up on meat, and we're shipping out like crazy. So how can we serve through that? One thing we can do is lower our prices and let everybody know, hey, we're in it with you. We've got a huge need here locally with our first responders, kids that are out of school that are relying on those two meals a day at school every day that now aren't going to get it. So it's also given us a lot of opportunities with our product to help serve as much as we can. And that's still kind of a daily conversation for us to figure out the best way to do that.
So as we come to a close, one of our co-hosts isn't here today, which is William. And William always likes to ask the question, is there something that God is speaking to you, even this morning or today or right now, that you would want to share with us? It could be a verse, it could be a prayer, it could be anything that maybe God has impressed on your heart that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Oh, man. You know, I heard a sermon a day or two ago from Craig Groeschel. And he was talking about they were all carriers of something. And again, it goes back to this coronavirus. And that was kind of what the whole sermon was based on. A little bit was our fear versus our faith. But he said, we're all carrying something. Are we carrying fear, which is going to be contagious to everybody we're around, everything we do? Or are we carrying the hope that Jesus promises us? And the reason why he came and died for us. And so he just kind of went into this. You may not physically have corona. You are carrying something that is highly contagious. And what is that? And I think it was just a neat reminder for a small group of us, and my family included, to kind of look back and realize no matter what we're going through, something is overflowing out of this. Is it good? Is it bad? You know, what are we passing on to those that we come in contact with, similar to what this virus can do and how contagious it is. And so, man, I want to continue to serve through this and fight to not be selfish, that my family and myself and that we're taken care of. I think if we look back on this another month or 6 months or whatever it is, and we just went into hibernation out at the ranch and protected ourselves, I think we would all feel really guilty of missing some awesome opportunities there to serve and do it wisely. You know what I'm saying? I'm not meaning let's all just go be reckless and have no concern of catching this, but I don't know. You're kind of making me think. I'm kind of thinking out loud now on what that looks like. All I know is I do not want to look up and have missed some huge opportunities to love on people and to serve people. And just real quick before we end, you know, the whole reason for Meat Company, E3 Meat Company, the whole reason for the E3 Chop Houses, everything, and all our employees know this, is for the E3 Foundation. And I know you guys talked to Steve and Amy, and that is why they exist, is to fund the foundation, which allows us to bring soldiers into the ranch, and serve those guys and love on them. And then also in the fight against sex trafficking, you know, to be able to go out and impact that. So that is our motivation and all the motivation we need for these companies to go kill it and do awesome is because, you know, that allows us to do more and serve more through the E3 Ranch Foundation.
That's great, Adam. Awesome. What's the website for people to learn more about the foundation to check things out?
That's e3gives.org. You can also just go to the E3 Ranch, e3ranch.com, and you can get to all the meat company. We've got a, through the total utilization of the steer, we've got a canine, which is a pet treat side. And then the restaurants, it's all kind of on the E3 Ranch homepage.
Adam, thank you so much for being with us. The encouragement, the example that you've been as a leader, as a dad, such timely advice and wisdom, whether it's an athlete, a business leader. Listening to this special episode, it was just great having you with us. And thanks for blessing us and our audience with those words.
Oh, man. Thank you guys again for allowing me to do it. I feel like we could spend another hour diving into some of this. I love discussing it.
Adam, thank you very much. It's a great blessing being with you. And
man, good talking to you guys.
As we finish each episode, we like to spotlight a partner that locks arms with faith-driven entrepreneurs. Can't think of anybody better to spotlight this week than our friends Dave Blanchard and the team that lead Praxis. They're a creative engine for redemptive entrepreneurship, supporting founders, funders, and innovators, motivated by their faith to renew culture and love their neighbors. Their community of practice operates through high-touch programs, robust content, and a global portfolio of redemptive businesses and nonprofit ventures. We'd encourage you to check them out and also the list of top 20 accelerators and capacity builders for faith-driven entrepreneurs to see how you can be engaged. Thanks so much for joining us on today's show. We hope you enjoyed it. We are very grateful for the opportunity to serve you, the larger faith-driven entrepreneur community, and we want to stay connected. The best way for you to do that is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. And while you're there, we want to hear from you. We derive great joy from interacting with many of you, and it's been very rewarding to see people come to the site and listen to the podcast now from more than over 100 countries. But it's even more important to us that you feel like this is your show and that you'll help make it something that best equips you on your entrepreneurial journey, one that you're proud of and one that you're going to share with others. Hey, this podcast wouldn't be possible without the help from many of our friends, executive producer Justin Foreman and program director Johnny Wills. Music is by Carl Kegwell. You can see and hear more of his work at summerdregs.com. Audio and editing by Richard Barley of Cornerstone Church in San Francisco.